Asia right now, the story of Asia right now remains China's rise.
U.S. relations with Asia are evolving, potentially about to take new turns under a new U.S. president. We chat with a former U.S. ambassador. It's Monday, January 9th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You're also a part of the program. Share your thoughts on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, North Korea says it has a new big missile. A Cambodian-American poet visits our studio. Rating the movies in Vietnam. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Welcome to VOA Asia, our first program. It's a bit of an experiment that presents in English our vast VOA reporting experience in Asian languages. And it's a program you may be a part of through our VOA Asia Facebook page. To start, we're honored to have by telephone from New York, Curtis Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asia Development Bank under both Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. And he's currently the Asia Fellow of the Milken Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank focused on economic issues based in Los Angeles and Singapore. Let's start by asking about the state of U.S. economic relations in Asia, what it means to the average resident, as we've all heard some very tough trade talk from our president-elect.
Well, first, again, great to be with you. I think in many ways, both Asia and the United States, it's in a bit of a flux and a little bit uncertain times right now. Clearly, the president-elect has made his views very clear about the U.S. trade with not just China, but with many parts of the world that we need to revisit. But for me, that actually can be very much a good thing. I think Asia right now, the story of Asia right now remains China's rise. And we talk a lot about the United States trade deficit with China, but the reality is that many countries around the world, maybe most countries, also have a trade deficit with China. And so what does that mean to the average person? You know, when you trade with China, you're getting probably a lot of goods relatively inexpensively, but there's a consequence to our always buying inexpensive goods from China. So yes, of course, you know, we want consumers to have inexpensive goods, but at the same time, if you don't have a job, no matter, you know, how wonderfully cheap that product is, you won't have the money to buy that good. So I think right now when we look at trade, we're going to look at the consequences over time of not just what are the products and services that we can buy, but also do we have the means with which to buy them.
And you mentioned Donald Trump. It's a bit unusual for an incoming president-elect to already be kind of influencing the situation, if you will, before the outgoing president is finished with his term. Mr. Trump trying to bring jobs back to the United States. He's mentioned perhaps imposing tariffs. And he was definitely opposed to the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Pact.
Yeah, very much so. You know, I mean, the unfortunate reality is that with any presidential election season, politics will very much intervene into the world of policy. Remember, under President Obama, his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was out touting what would have been, in her words, the gold standard of trade deals. And in the midst of her campaign, I would say she stabbed the Trans-Pacific Partnership in the back, you know, the trade deal. But very clearly, she herself turned against that trade deal. So I think both Republicans and Democrats said, you know, trade deals of the past have to be thought through. It's not necessarily a bad thing to revisit some of these trade deals from the past, to hopefully make it better. Ideally, all sides benefit. But it's all about negotiation. And I think Asia included, there was so much talk under President Obama and former Secretary of State Clinton about a pivot to Asia. What President-elect Trump and soon-to-be President Trump is saying, well, maybe we need to have a pivot to America. Yeah, as an American, I think that's a good thing, but my hope is that a pivot to America also means strong U.S.-Asia relations. It'll be different than it was under President Obama. I am hopeful that things can be for the better of American workers, American companies, but it's not necessarily a zero-sum game. But Asia will also benefit.
Curtis Chin, former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank, thank you so much. We'll be talking with you much more down the road.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much, Curtis.
Thank you.
These are among some of the top stories that are currently trending in Asia. In North Korea, Kim Jong-un's birthday passes quietly. Taiwanese president lands in the United States. Choked by smog, Beijing creates new environmental police. More viewers and more scrutiny for China's online movies. In Sri Lanka, a China port deal protest turns violent. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also check out our voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken says North Korea has shown a qualitative improvement in its nuclear and missile capabilities. North Korean President Kim Jong-un, in his New Year's Day address, said preparations for launching an intercontinental ballistic missile have reached the final stage. In response, the U.S. State Department said the North has not acquired the ability to tip an ICBM with a nuclear warhead. President-elect Donald Trump reacted by sending out a tweet in which he said it won't happen. Despite the U.S. rejection of North Korea's purported capability, experts are raising concern about the threats emanating from the regime. Ali Heinonen is a former deputy director general of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and he told our VOA Korean reporters that Pyongyang might be approaching or might have already hit a milestone in its arms development after it conducted five nuclear tests since 2006.
If we look at historical examples, you know, Pakistan, India, China, Russia, France, UK, where they were after five tests. So they started to have a nuclear weapon which they can deliver. And I think that the North Koreans are now on that milestone.
The most recent nuclear test in September 2016 produced an explosive yield of around 20 to 30 kilotons, said Heinonen. And he said that's very sizable. He says the unknowns surrounding the North's nuclear and weapons programs are posing the greatest threat because they make it difficult to determine current and future capabilities. The size of North Korea's current stockpiles of highly enriched uranium and plutonium, its uranium enrichment capacity, and its progress in developing nuclear weapons and delivery systems are among the many things that are subject to uncertainties, he says. And Heinonen also suggests that additional clandestine nuclear facilities of unknown scale could exist, other than the widely known nuclear test site and the nuclear reactor facility. Another nuclear expert is David Albright. He's the president and founder of the nonprofit Institute for Science and International Security. And he says North Korea already possessed the technical sophistication to miniaturize a nuclear warhead that could be placed on top of a ballistic missile. And he says it was on track to achieve substantial nuclear yield, probably in the 50 to 100 kiloton range.
If you look at this technically, divorce yourself from the politics of North Asia, you'd have a hard time arguing that they didn't miniaturize. It would make them the worst nuclear weapons program in the world, that after five nuclear tests, they couldn't miniaturize.
David Albright also warns that North Korea could hold around 12 to 20 uranium-based nuclear weapons, and by the year 2020, it might have enough material to build as many as 80 nuclear weapons.
They appear to have mastered fission weapons using plutonium or weapon-grade uranium.
Our VOA Korean reporters also spoke with Jonathan McDowell of the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, who raised doubts about the communist state's ability to launch an intercontinental ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead.
I think that they are probably still 5 years away from an ICBM.
U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken told a joint news conference after a meeting with his Japanese and South Korean counterparts that North Korea has conducted 24 missile tests in the past year, as well as two nuclear tests, and learned from each one. What do you think? Is North Korea a stronger threat to its immediate neighbors and now possibly the United States? What do you think might be good ways to deal with that threat? Let us know. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we look forward to hearing what you say. Perhaps we'll even include your comments on this program. Happening now in Asia. North Korea marked Kim Jong-un's birthday Sunday in a decidedly low-key manner. His birthday is well known throughout the country, but has yet to be celebrated with the kind of festivities that accompanied the birthdays of his late grandfather and father. Pyongyang residents did what they do every second Sunday of the new year, joined in sports events. There's more on VOA Asia Facebook. One of the very fun aspects of working at Voice of America is the fact that so many interesting people stop by and visit our studios here in Washington. Cambodian-American poet Monica Sok was here just the other day. Her work has appeared in The New Republic and The Offering. She was named as part of the Narrative's 30 Under 30 and is a 2016 through 2018 Stadler Fellow at Bucknell University. She spoke with my VOA Asia colleague Steve Miller. He began the conversation by asking her, what inspired and piqued her interest in poetry?
That's a great question. I think that poetry just makes me feel empowered naturally. I just feel that it's a place where I can undo any silences about my history, my life. Being born in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and growing up as a Cambodian American was difficult in a small town. And I think a lot of Cambodian Americans across the U.S. can relate to how that feels. For me, I felt turning to poetry, I could really celebrate who I am.
Some of your works deal with very traumatic times back in Cambodia. What is it for you personally that is important about some of the poems you've written about the conflict in Cambodia during the Khmer Rouge period that enables you to move forward? And also, what is it like to have those words be printed and shared with so many around the globe?
It's kind of scary to have to stand behind the words I've written, because some of these poems I've written for myself. But I think that it's important for me to explore history and write about the killing fields in poetry, because first of all, you know, I didn't see that being written a lot. I wasn't learning these histories in school. There is this writer, Toni Morrison, says, if there's a book that you want to read and it hasn't been written yet, then you must write that book. That's what I had to do to take initiative.
We're here in the 21st century, 2017. A lot of young people, you're one of the 30 under 30, look to internet fame.
Yeah.
For celebrity, for a career path, for something different than taking a normal career period.
Right.
Where do you see the role of poetry in this internet age?
I hope that in the internet age, poetry is made more accessible to people, audiences that do not usually get to listen to poetry or hear it or read it. So I think that it's very useful for poets to be able to disseminate their work and to connect with others. And essentially, poetry is meant to help people empathize with one another.
Monica Sok is an author and the 2016 to 2018 Stadler Fellow at Bucknell University. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Japan has temporarily withdrawn its ambassador to South Korea as a dispute escalates over a statue erected by activists representing wartime sex slaves. South Korea has long called for reparations for so-called comfort women forced to work in Japanese military brothels during World War II. You'll find more on the story on Facebook at VOA Asia. Most of us enjoy going to the movie theater, maybe having some popcorn, and sinking back into a big seat in the dark to watch a great story being told on a huge screen. many places, you already have an idea of what to expect because the movie has been rated. Not so in Vietnam, until now. VOA's Han Nguyen joins us as this move has received critical acclaim.
The movies with a lot of, you know, violent scenes and sex scenes, using drugs, a lot of violence.
That might be adversely influential to younger people.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And before, when we didn't have this kind of rating system, the ministries of culture, they censor those movies. They cut off some scenes, so the movie might not be, you know, what it was in the beginning. And directors were not happy with that. And I talked to one actress.
Hong An, I believe
Hong
it was.
An, yeah.
Yeah. Why was she so happy? Did it preserve her work, she felt?
Well, she was in the movie, she was not in movies that were cut up a lot of things, but I think she was in the industry. And she understand that, you know, a lot of directors, they were not happy with the movies that they made and then were cut off.
When they become available later, say on a disc or computer, are they still cut up?
So that's a debate now. It's just going on that, you know, directors, they were wondering that if the movies would still be cut up or not. So they're trying to, you know, get that question answered.
I guess the movie going public, though, is happy, too, because they know now better what these films are about before they see them based on the ratings.
Yeah.
They know this is a good movie to take their kids to.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. That's what she said, that before, you know, if you didn't know, like, what kind of movie was that, maybe you would worry if you come with your kids. Maybe there would be some, you know, scenes that were not good for them.
Right.
So now you know. And some directors said that maybe their audiences is not big as before for their movies, but they are happy that their movies will not be cut up.
We rate this interview G for great.
Yeah.
Han Nguyen, thank you.
Thank you.
You'll find Han Nguyen's story in Vietnamese at voatiengviet.com. Use that same name to find more on Facebook and YouTube.
Are you with me?
At this hour in Asia, veteran actor, Indian actor Om Puri has died. He was 66. The actor suffered a heart attack at his residence in Mumbai early Friday. Puri was known for his roles in Indian, Pakistani, British, and Hollywood films. Stay up to date on Facebook at VOA Asia. We've gathered the VOA Asia team in the studio to give you an introduction to ourselves and who we are. You've heard me earlier in the program, Jim Stevenson, Steve Miller as well, and we're also joined by Ali Ogden, who primarily is taking care of our social media for us, which is really exciting because this is how you directly connect with us. Steve, you spent some time in South Korea. This was really interesting.
I did. I had the opportunity to live and work in South Korea for almost 7 years, covering regional news, but also history, culture, and travel throughout the region. And I have to be honest with you, Jim, I really miss being around Asia, especially as we get closer to the Lunar New Year.
Yes, it's a big event coming up. We're all excited about that. And of course, we're going to be celebrating it here on our program. What were some of the interesting places that you traveled to? You did a lot of videos that people can still see.
Right. I really enjoyed, of course, traveling throughout the Korean Peninsula and South Korea, visiting the palaces, the temples, but also throughout the Philippines, throughout Cambodia, Hong Kong, throughout Thailand, and visiting historic places. But more importantly, interacting with everyone. And of course, my favorite thing, the food.
Well, you can't go anywhere in the world without sampling the cuisine where you are. Hopefully it agrees with you.
It does. And I am a very adventurous eater, and I will try anything at least once.
Steve will be hosting the program from time to time as well.
Ali Ogden, we're so happy to have you. You came from Radio Free Asia.
I did indeed.
Yes. And you have a lot of social media background. You're our direct link with our audience. You help facilitate the conversation. Some of the things that we're going to be doing on Facebook are going to be pretty exciting.
Yes, absolutely. I'm thrilled to be here, thrilled to get this started. I think it's a really exciting project. Looking forward to getting things going.
Well, Ali, I understand that you recently made a trip to Cambodia.
I did. I was in Cambodia and also Vietnam. I had a fantastic sunrise experience in Angkor Wat, Cambodia, which I will never forget. It's absolutely stunning. Being there in the midst of those temples and watching the sunrise over Angkor Wat and hanging out with the monkeys, you know, right next to me as the sun rose. Pretty unforgettable experience.
As many of you might know, if you've listened to VOA through the years, my name is Jim Stevenson. This is one of our favorite regions in the world. It is so dynamic, changing, just so many things of interest. Plus, I know that everybody is eager to find out how things are going to turn out when we get a new president and the relations with Asia and the interactions with Asia, how that's all going to work out. Just thrilled to have Steve Miller, Ali Ogden on the team. Reach out to us on social media. And that's social media to check out. Facebook, the name is VOA Asia. We're also happy to have our listeners in Myanmar with us this morning via our VOA Burmese News on Facebook. We're glad to have you. You can always find us at voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Nelson Lopes. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for listening to VOA Asia. Have a great day. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Tropical Forest Conservation Act Kalimantan, or TFCA Kalimantan, a partnership program among the United States government, the Government of Indonesia, the Nature Conservancy, and the Yayasan Worldwide Fund for Nature Indonesia, has recently approved 14 new grants worth $3.3 million to local Indonesian non-governmental organizations. These NGOs will work with forest-dependent communities to conserve tropical forests, protect natural resources and wildlife, and improve livelihoods. This is the third cycle of the $28.5 million planned investment in forest conservation efforts in Kalimantan under the TFCA. This Debt for Nature Swap Agreement, signed in 2011, promotes sustainable forest resource management, biodiversity conservation, and community development. The cooperating Indonesian NGOs will implement 14 projects in East, West, and Central Kalimantan. The newly approved projects will provide incentives for forest-dependent communities to conserve tropical forests by improving local livelihoods, focusing in areas such as community development, conflict resolution in forest management, and ecotourism. Some of the projects will also support conservation efforts of near-extinct animals in Kalimantan, including rhinoceros, Irrawaddy dolphins, and orangutans. Since 2009, the United States government has worked with the government of Indonesia to support its forest conservation efforts. Under three TFCA agreements, Indonesia's debt payments are reduced in exchange for activities that conserve tropical forests in Sumatra and Kalimantan. These activities build strong foundations for local involvement in biodiversity protection, sustainable use, and conservation policymaking. The TFCA Kalimantan agreement is administered by the Kehati Foundation. Acting Deputy Chief of Mission Mark Clark said, "The United States is proud to work with Indonesia and our partners to conserve some of the world's most diverse tropical rainforest through a debt for nature swap. Protecting the forest helps conserve the world's rich biodiversity and preserves the ability of forests to sustain livelihoods for local residents."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.